You're listening to RSJ Radio.
Hello, and thank you for joining us on this terrific Tuesday afternoon. I'm Tagwamoyo.
I'm Amanda Gilmore, and this is Are You Listening? Today in the news, TransCanada has put a halt on the development of the Keystone Pipeline. Speculation is rising about Justin Trudeau's new cabinet, and Quebec schools have been evacuated due to bomb threats. Here are the details.
In a stunning turn of events, the TransCanada Corporation has asked the U.S. State Department to put a pause on the Keystone Pipeline. Until recently, the company had been pushing for approval. The Keystone Pipeline is an $18 billion project that will carry U.S. and Canadian oil to American refineries. There has been no speculation that TransCanada is hoping the pipeline will be approved after the U.S. President Obama leaves office in 2017. But the company denied this.
The Trudeau government is set to announce its final cabinet members tomorrow. The hot topic right now? Trudeau's call for equal representation of women in his cabinet. Reporter Christina Esposito has more.
The Liberals' lips are sealed until tomorrow when Trudeau announces his official cabinet members. Even though members were sworn into secrecy, Trudeau still managed to flip tradition on its head by explaining his strategy for choosing a more diverse, leaner bunch. Despite winning a majority government and being handed stacks of new possible candidates for his advisory council, Trudeau's promises will stick to a quota that may be controversial. So what is he promising that's splitting opinions across Canada? He says exactly 14 men and 14 women will make up his cabinet, a quota that some say is unnecessary and takes away from merit-based decision-making. Dr. Kim Stanton, a legal director at the Women's Legal Education and Action Fund in Toronto, disagrees. She says Trudeau's quota can affect Canada's view of women in Parliament for the future.
The difficulty is that in the past, people have not made a point of putting women in leadership roles who are qualified, and we don't see them as role models and we don't see them in those positions. The reality is there's plenty of qualified women who've been elected who could ably take on the roles in cabinet, and I don't think it's about quota. I think it's about having a reflection of our society.
According to Stanton, it's a step forward for women in government positions, and it's no surprise that women feel underqualified to even apply for government positions in the first place.
It's really important to have women who are elected roles such as cabinet minister so that other women will be inspired to run in the first place. But the important thing is to also see changes in how parties handle the nominations process. We've known for decades that that is still the place where women have the hardest time getting through. But they need the support in the party operations in the first place to get in the door.
Even with the equality in gender, a 28-member cabinet is still quite lean. That's 11 fewer members than the previous Conservative cabinet, but Trudeau still promises to have proportional representation. For the first time in federal history, Trudeau says 2 out of 28 cabinet members will be Aboriginal and promises a balanced representation of minority groups. Many think Trudeau's diversity approach will yield positive change for how minority groups are represented and heard when it comes to public matters. For Are You Listening? I'm Christina Esposito.
A wave of bomb threats has forced some schools in Quebec to close for the day. A single email targeting 40 institutions was sent from an anonymous source. Montreal police have searched some schools, but no schools in Montreal have been evacuated. Quebec provincial police say that they don't know whether or not the threat is credible.
Ahmed Chalabi, the Iraqi politician who helped persuade the U.S. to invade Iraq in 2003, died this morning in his home at the age of 71. Iraqi officials are saying that the cause of death was heart failure. Chalabi is survived by his wife and 4 children.
There will no longer be TV and radio coverage of Islamic militant groups in Pakistan. This comes after Pakistan Electronic Media Regulation Authority announced that media ban late Monday night. The ban comes a year after Pakistani government vowed to crack down on militant groups. The Media Regulation Authority said failure to abide by the orders would result in cancellation of broadcast license.
Toronto police held a press conference today detailing the arrest of Fatih Rathi. Rathi faces 13 charges related to a string of sexual assaults that began earlier this year in the Rathburn Road and Renforth Drive area. Rathi allegedly approached underage girls near schools asking for directions before sexually assaulting them. According to a spokesperson for the Toronto Police, there may be more victims.
Yes, I definitely believe there are other victims. This is ongoing. He's been doing it at least on a monthly basis. If pretty much since April, so I have no reason to disbelieve that there wouldn't be more.
The investigation is ongoing, and police will release more information as it becomes available.
Ontario's acting environmental commissioner released her annual report this morning, titled Small Things Matter. In her report, she encouraged the Ontario government to take a stand and to do more to protect the diverse environments in province. Maria Fregardo has more.
The release focused mainly on water issues in Ontario parks. Ellen Schwartzell says that although people don't pay for water use, the Ontario government spends more than $16 million on water management.
The few industries that are charged only pay $3.71 per million liters of water. This works out to less than $10 to fill an Olympic-sized swimming pool.
Schwartzell says her office is urging the province to charge users for water to encourage conservation and increase water management resources. The report shows that many water-taking permits are not available for public viewing on the Environmental Registry, and Schwartzell thinks that's wrong.
These are permits that the public should have a right to see and comment on, and not only because transparency is a worthy principle. Ontarians should be paying attention to water quantity issues.
Ontario parks and protected lands were also a big part of the report. Schwartzell says that a low budget for parks is not enough to protect new parcels of land. The report shows that in Southern Ontario, parks only covers 1% of the land.
We observe that it has been years since the province spent any significant money to acquire new conservation lands.
A decade ago, the Ontario government had $5 million for land acquisition programs, but last year it only had $1,000 for the entire province. This is Maria Figueredo for Are You Listening?
Romeo Fillion, who spent 31 years in prison after being wrongly convicted of a murder, has died. He had been convicted of murder in 1972 for the stabbing death of an Ottawa firefighter. He confessed to the murder while in custody on a robbery charge, but later said it was a bad joke. He got a new trial, which led to him receiving bail in 2003 and the charges being withdrawn in 2010. Fillion, who had been in failing health for years, was admitted to the hospital on Sunday and passed away yesterday. He was the longest-serving inmate in Canada to have a murder conviction overturned.
Tens of thousands of records about settlement process with the survivors of Indian residential schools will be released tomorrow for the first time ever. The documents will be available after the official opening of the National Research Center for Truth and Reconciliation at the University of Manitoba in Winnipeg. The batch of records being released will contain information of 139 schools between 1883 and 1996.
The richest Canadians are still the richest Canadians. Canadian 1%ers still hold 10.3% of the nation's total income. Stats Canada released a new report this morning, breaking down the numbers of how much the wealthiest make. The average income for a member of Canada's top 1% was close to $455,000. Ontario had the most members of the 1% with more than 40% of the total.
It's voting time again. The Ryerson Art Society, or RAS, is holding a referendum in hopes of establishing a student-led body. Eva Selovic has more.
The referendum might just cast a role for the committee. The RAS would be representing the 11 programs which make up the Faculty of Arts. One of the few faculties without a student union, says the organizing committee's chair, Marzia Riaz.
They're still in their very early stages of becoming history, philosophy. They still haven't had their first batch of graduates yet, right? So I think that's what it is too. A lot of the other faculties, for example, engineering and Ted Rogers, they have been around for a long time and they've had this time to sort of establish themselves and establish their own student leaders, whereas we are still in the process of making the first batch of student leaders.
Ryerson's Board of Governors approved the group's referendum after the committee conducted a survey of just under 300 students in which a majority were in favor of the union. A vote would decide whether or not students will pay an additional $30 fee per semester to fund the society's operations. The change would commence in the new school year. If enrollment numbers are similar to that of last year's, the RAS would collect an estimated $245,000. The funds would go towards organizing networking events, supporting course unions, as well as academic funding, such as research grants, scholarships, exchange, or special projects. A representative from each program will make up the board of directors to ensure the money is distributed fairly. Marzia is optimistic about establishing a community within the arts faculty.
We've only had our first day so far, but the turnout has been amazing. People we talked to seem to get really engaged and really excited about it. Either they already wanted something like this, or they didn't even realize that they were lacking something.
Voting begins online today and will run until November 5th through student RAMS accounts. I'm Eva Selabic for Are You Listening?
Recapping today's top stories, a man wrongly convicted of murder dies at the age of 76. Ryerson's Art Society is having a referendum to have its own student union. And thousands of records at the settlement process with the survivor of Indian residential schools will be released on Wednesday. That's all in the world of news. Amanda Gilmer has the latest in current affairs.
In current affairs, the Ryerson Art Society holds an event to showcase comedic and poetic talents. The sports world is going crazy over Toronto's very own Raptors. A new paper released by NASA shows that Antarctica is not contributing to rising sea levels, and self-driving cars are the hottest thing in business. But first to arts.
In the world of arts and entertainment, the controversial director Quentin Tarantino is burning bridges with the police. Adele has hit record sales, and the Supplers Theater has announced their lineup for 2016. Here's Catherine Machado with these stories and more.
This week, the Ryerson Arts Society is hosting events in hopes of bringing attention to the school's arts community. They've kicked off the week with the Ryerson Showcase last night. Here's Adelia Law with the details.
A pause overwhelms the Eaton Lecture Theatre at the Rogers Communication Centre last night with the first ever Ryerson Comedy and Poetry Showcase. The Ryerson Arts Society and the Social Work Students Union co-hosted the event with few other organizations, and Carlton Cinema as sponsor. Poets and comedians included the all-girl poetry collective, The Rage Dolls, and award-winning comedian and feminist Ashley Moffat performed on stage and brought up some social issues with their work. The event organizer Michael Friedman says the event is trying to raise awareness.
So I think the theme of this event and night was social issues that are prominent in our Canadian society. Because if it's being run by a Social Work Students Union, you know, you want to incorporate some sort of social topics like racism, sexism, and so on and so forth.
Ryerson has not been hot for arts activities in the past, but Michael believes the heat among the audience last night proves a thriving interest in arts among Ryerson students.
People are willing to come out on a Monday night when assignments and midterms are due. They're willing to put that aside for a night to go and have fun and engage with material that they don't engage with in this way so often. So I think it's like really high energy and lots of people are willing to participate in art forms.
Ashley Moffat, who plays around with heavy issues like sexual orientation, single parenthood, and feminism in a hilarious way, won a lot of praise last night. Here's an example.
The main message I was trying to convey was that I am super talented. Period.
The showcase is part of the referendum activities of the Arts Society, which are going on till November 5th, and there's definitely an arts vibe going on in Ryerson. This is Odelia Law from Are You Listening?
Pull out your calendars. The Soul Pepper Theatre announced their lineup this morning for 2016. The lineup features the play Father Comes Home from the Wars by Pulitzer Prize-winning playwright Suzanne Laurie Parks. The play is a new spin on the classic poem, The Odyssey, and is set during the American Civil War. Soul Pepper's artistic director, Albert Schultz, told The Globe that he thinks the season is going in the right direction with four female writers, three directors of color, and two writers of color. Theater fans also have a chance to watch returning shows such as 12 Angry Men, The Odd Couple, and Jitters. Police groups have called to boycott the film director Quentin Tarantino's The Hateful Eight. This comes after he made comments against police brutality during a rally in Brooklyn last month. He said he believes there is murder going on and that he is on the side of the murdered. The National Association of Police Organizations asked officers to stop providing security, traffic control, or technical advice for any of the director's projects. The boycott has put pressure on one of December's most anticipated releases. Tarantino has yet to respond publicly to the backlash. And Adele is at it again. Her new song, Hello, has become the first song to sell 1 million tracks in a week. This is the singer's fourth number one on Billboard's Hot 100 chart, following Rolling in the Deep, Someone Like You, and Set Fire to the Rain. Hello is the first single from Adele's third album, 25. The album is set to be released November 20th. Good luck not getting this one stuck in your head. I'm Catherine Machado for Are You Listening?
Next up in health and science, climate change could cause malnutrition by 2080. A new device to prevent bacteria spreading in hospitals and Antarctica has been accumulating more ice. Here's Pascal Devirlis with more.
A UN expert has predicted the negative impacts of climate change could subject 600 million people to malnutrition by 2080. They've warned extreme weather, floods, droughts, and rising sea levels will threaten people's access to food. They're recommending a shift from large-scale industrial agriculture to supporting local food movements and small-scale farmers. It's bad news for skiing enthusiasts. Sweden will experience less snow by the end of the century. Experts say global warming is the reason behind the shrinkage. The length of the snowy season will be reduced 40 to 80 days. Despite worries about climate change, Antarctica has been gaining more ice. Reporter Mitch Bullmile has more.
Ice, ice, baby. A recent paper published by NASA has revealed that Antarctica is actually gaining more ice than it's losing. This contradicts previous studies released in which Antarctica's loss of ice was contributing to rising sea levels. Director of the Center for Global Change Science at University of Toronto, Richard Peltier, believes that Greenland is much more of a contributing factor.
The dominant source, or a very significant and much more significant than Antarctica's source of global sea level rise, is the mass loss from Greenland. Okay, there's also very significant mass occurring from the ice catchments over Alaska and the Yukon territories.
The data from the paper was all discovered using satellites.
The rate at which Antarctica is losing mass is basically constrained by the GRACE satellites, which have been in space now since about 2002. And these satellites measure the time dependence of the gravitational field.
Lead author of the paper and NASA glaciologist Jay Zwali said that the trend could reverse in a couple decades and Antarctica could contribute to the rise in sea levels. NASA will continue to measure Antarctica's ice. The U.S. Space Agency is in the process of developing a new satellite that will be able to measure long-term changes in Antarctica's ice sheets better. The new satellite is planned to be launched in 2018. For Are You Listening, I'm Mitch Bullmile.
A new device has been invented to stop germy smartphones from infecting hospital patients. Clean Slate works by putting your phone under a UV light, and 30 seconds later, your phone is germ-free. Clean Slate is meant to target C. difficile, MRSA, VRE, and other dangerous bugs that are hospital-borne. I'm Pascal Davrilis for Are You Listening?
This week in sports, the Jays keep Bautista, Encarnacion, and Dickey on the team. The players will be earning $10 and $14 million each next season. Plus, the Raptors start off the season on top, the Leafs finally end their losing streak, and we'll explore a wearable technology that is changing the game of sports. Olivia Ciarello has more.
The Raptors are back and they're getting buckets. The team started off the season 3-0 for the first time since the 2008-2009 season. They won their first game against the Indiana Pacers, followed by a win against the Boston Celtics. The third victory was against the Milwaukee Bucks. This game marked the 157th win for Dwayne Casey as coach for the Toronto Raptors. This pushes Casey past former coach Sam Mitchell on the franchise's all-time wins list and raises his winning percentage to the best mark in franchise history. The Raptors will be playing their fourth game at 8:30 p.m. tonight against the Dallas Mavericks. Leaf fans finally get to celebrate after the team's 4-1 win against the Dallas Stars last night. This was only their second win of the season after a six-game losing streak. The Leafs play a home game tomorrow at 7 p.m. against the Winnipeg Jets. From the rink to the court, sports players need to know how they perform if they want to be winning. Wearable Entertainment and Sports Toronto is a conference willing to tackle this question. The conference hosted a range of tech startups, all looking at ways to improve a player's training. Michael Stolarczyk brings you the story.
People hit a bag to see how fast it can throw a punch. A nearby computer shows off the speed each punch is thrown at. is a brand new technology by Hikso, a startup looking to improve a boxer's throw. They are a group involved in Wearable Entertainment and Sports Toronto. It is a conference all about how wearable technology is improving the athletic world. Patrick Chandler is a data scientist for Hikso.
Showtime showed interest in us and the product to be able to put it live on matches so we can have up to 56 more statistics about boxing matches. Whereas now it's like people only talk about four or five, and it's KOs, win-loss, number of punches per round and things like that, where we can get speed, impact, strength. All these things, you could be in the match and feel the punches, which is something that's unprecedented in the industry.
Another group called AllInFit looked at a different angle in training. They strap little devices on athletes in order to record their form when working out. Ibadad Bambre engineered the devices in his last year of university.
We feel technology can really play a great role in helping provide the same knowledge to the people that a real person can. So we're trying to emulate the whole experience through technology, at the same time making it more affordable and accessible.
The mastermind behind the entire conference is Tom Emmerich. He says wearable technology is the future of sports.
Wearable technology is not quite new for athletes, coaches, sports scientists, and that's mainly because as an athlete, you see your body as a machine. So you're used to using tools that give you insight as to how your machine is doing, how your respiratory is doing, your heart rate, your activity, monitoring things like your performance, as well as mitigating risks of injury. You need to have your machine well-oiled and ready for game time.
Emmerich started the conference in Toronto, believing it to be a sports-centric city. Now, in its second year, the event continues to attract curious eyes from all over the sports world. Michael Stolarczyk, are you listening?
The Kansas City Royals won the World Series championship on Sunday after a 7-2 victory over the New York Mets. The city will be throwing a huge party today to celebrate the team's first World Series championship in 30 years. City officials say they expect a parade of over 200,000 people in downtown Kansas City. The players, coaches, and team officials of the Kansas City Royals will all be in attendance for one of the biggest parties in the city's history. That's all for sports. I'm Olivia Ciarello for Are You Listening?
In business today, self-driving cars, the hottest Christmas toys, and Sears has appointed a new president. We're going over to Bailey Vickers with more.
Nissan is looking to increase the safety of driving by introducing self-driving cars to the road. The Associated Press took a pre-programmed half-hour test drive in the prototype vehicle. There was one human intervention when the car didn't recognize an unclear line, but other than that, it showed potential. Nissan is preparing for the self-driving car options to go on sale in 2020. Until the technology is finally tuned, Nissan will offer individual features in other models, such as keeping a safe distance from the car in front. Sears has hired retail veteran Carrie Kirkman as the new president and chief merchant. Kirkman has worked with Nine West Shoes as well as Jones Apparel, giving her extensive background in retail. She aims to focus on women ages 35 to 50 because the percent of shoppers in this range is at a low 18%. She will place clothing lines such as Jessica Simpson more prominently to attract younger shoppers. Speaking of retail, the Canadian Toy Association presented hot toys for the holidays in Toronto this morning. Trevor Hewitt was there.
Well, it was a sight for bored eyes at the Ontario Science Centre this morning as a barrage of wheels and mechanized legs whizzed across the floor. The event paired up children of all ages with this season's hottest new gadgets, games, and gizmos.
Mechanoid!
On the game floor, 7-year-old Mary has found a new metal chum in Mechanoid, a toy robot.
What do you think your favorite toy that you've seen so far here is?
Oh, I definitely have to go with the Mechanoid because he's so cool. He's like a robot as a toy.
Board Chair Steve Morris says that the event is an effort to promote a return to traditional toys based on connection and teamwork.
One of the things that's interesting about toys today, and I learned, I was at a seminar a few years ago, and this was 3 years ago, and the person speaking says we have a crisis in our industry when 4-year-old children are playing with iPads.
Morris says that in 2015, it's the parents' and manufacturers' responsibility to make sure that kids are playing with age-appropriate technology that encourages positive growth.
makes it more important for us as toy manufacturers and toy retailers as well to ensure that parents are telling their kids that there's more to play than just electronics.
According to Morris, that means adequate research into what kids like and what works.
And millions and millions of dollars in research and development and manufacturing is put into making these toys come to life and to teach kids how to play and how to play with other kids.
In addition to showcasing new toys, there is a charitable aspect to the event, as thousands of toys will be sent to needy children in northern communities and distributed by the RCMP.
They get put on a one of those big military cargo planes, and they will fly. I believe they go to Goose Bay and Thunder Bay and Inuvik, I think, are the three places, and then they're distributed by the RCMP to needy kids.
Well, the toys here might not be the same old Woody and Buzz we all know. They sure are going infinity and beyond for a good cause. For Are You Listening, I'm Trevor Hewitt.
Prime Minister Justin Trudeau is faced with a $1 billion decision early on in his mandate. The Quebec government has invested $1 billion in helping Bombardier complete its commercial jet program and is asking for Trudeau's help. The struggling airplane and train manufacturing company employs thousands of residents in Trudeau's home province. A decision will be made later this week. That's all for business. I'm Bailey Vickers for Are You Listening?
And now to today's mini-docs. Security guards at Woodbine Casino are back on the job after 3 weeks of being locked out. All 150 security guards will be on the picket line, getting paid half of what they usually get paid. And it's all because they were fighting for the rights to keep their pension and benefits. Here's Amanda Gilmore with the story.
It's been a while since those blue security shirts have been walking inside Woodbine Casino, but they're back to do their job. If you had an OLG security guard's radio, you would hear them being called to help. And if you stood in the middle of the casino floor, you would see the blue shirts running to patrons' aid. The fact is, the security guards are the lifeline of the entire casino. When someone trips and falls, it's the security guards who are there to help them. And in the worst of times, it's the security guards who are there when a patron needs reviving due to a heart attack. But then word came of an unknown new provider taking over OLG's workers next year, leaving the workers in the dark about their benefits and pension. Part-time security guard Roya King is a single mother of a 7-year-old son. She relies on her family to babysit for her because she doesn't make enough money for daycare. She's depending on her pension so she can leave money for her son.
The company that's going to take over, or the provider that's going to take over, they're going to take over the name of Woodbine. OLG, they get the say of what happens on the floor, and they get a percentage of the profit. So they're going to make the money, but they're going to they don't have to pay the employees in it. We wanted to know what was going on with our pension and benefit once the new provider takes over.
That's when the 150 security guards took their concern to their union, Unifor. Unifor has won cases for many different OLG workers all across Ontario. They took the case immediately and got the security guards to make an offer to OLG.
According to the union, the company walked out and walked away from the table when it came to the benefit and pension. They kicked us out. It wasn't a strike. Once they locked us out, they sent everybody a letter saying, well, we're giving you a fair offer, but we don't understand why you're not taking it.
And in a snap of a finger, all 150 of the lifelines to the casino were gone. The guards were replaced by only 10 non-contract security. The OLG security guards may not have been found inside the casino, but at every entrance to the parking lots stood many. Full-time security guard Monique, who didn't wish to give her last name, is a single parent to a 2-year-old daughter. Because she's a modified worker due to her back injury, her hours are shorter than other full-time employees. In order to relieve her back pain, she relies on her benefits.
When we first started off, we did Tuesdays, we were off Mondays, and we did Wednesday, off Thursday, back Friday, Saturday, Sunday. They say 18 hours, but I remember one day I did like almost 10 hours. And I started that would have been like almost my whole time in one day, but I did more than that because I didn't have another job.
2 weeks into the lockout and no new offer from OLG sparked fire to the security guard's fight. For patrons, coming into the casino started changing. They had to slam on their brakes as security guards held signs and marched across parking lot entrances. They were forced to listen to Unifor and the security guards tell them what they were fighting for. Some patrons got fed up with the long wait time and drove away. Then, on Friday afternoon of the second week of being locked out, patrons were told they weren't allowed to enter the property. Part-time Arroya was picketing at the time.
The day we stopped people from coming, it wasn't us. It was Unifor, and they came in, they fully shut the site, they got the cops. The cops knew what was going on, and just to avoid any accidents, the cops pretty much stayed because there is no court order on anything, so they had no choice but to allow us to have it. So it was good because it did do an impact in here. It was a ghost town inside.
A week later, Unifor got the call from OLG saying they had a new offer. The vote on the offer was 70% in favor and 30% not. Full-timer Monique voted in favor of this offer.
The part-timers lost a lot, but me being full-time, I didn't really lose anything much except the language about the pension. The signing bonus that we got for $2,500, it automatically took everything out of the collective agreement about pension. So we will have to negotiate when the new owner comes in.
Part-timer Roya isn't as happy with the offer that was given.
We got nothing. Pretty much whatever we went to the table with and the company decided not to give us, they forced us to come back with that exact same number. I don't agree with it. When somebody kicks me out, I come back on my terms, not theirs. People that saw the $2,500 signing bonus, they were blinded by that $2,500, not what they lost to get that $2,500 signing bonus. But when you sit down and break it down for them, they realize technically they got nothing after taxes.
They may be back on the casino floor in their blue uniforms running around with their radios buzzing, but it's clear this labor dispute has pitted full-time against part-time. The guards used to have great communication with each other. Now, the part-timers won't call the full-timers, and the full-timers won't call the part-timers for assistance on the gaming floor. Other workers inside the casino and the patrons can feel the tension building between the two sides, and it's causing an unsettling workplace. I'm Amanda Gilmore for Are You Listening? After 22 long years, the Toronto Blue Jays finally made the playoffs this year. Fans across the nation banded together to cheer on the only Canadian Major League Baseball team. Here's Alexandria Pancratz with the story.
Starstruck fans not only exist in Toronto, but rather in cities all over the country. Shelby Pierce is originally from Vancouver, but moved to Toronto for school. She attended several of the playoff games and gave her family and friends back home play-by-play updates.
During the time that the Jays were in the playoffs this year, everyone was so excited back home. Like, they were always calling. Like, if there was a game and they knew that I was watching it or at the game, like, everyone was like messaging and getting me to send pictures and videos and like live updates from every game, and just like always wanted to like keep in touch and know what I was doing and know what was going on in the city to support the team.
The Jays averaged 1.72 million viewers across the nation during their playoff run, which was the second highest in Sportsnet's 17-year history. Lorraine Cordry is a marketing and insight manager at IPG Brands Toronto. She noticed that the Jays' popularity exploded on Twitter, especially after they made the playoffs.
I just looked this morning, and previously, before the postseason, the most number of tweets in a day was on the 30th of July, which was when David Price was traded, and there was 34,000 tweets just about the Blue Jays. Just looked again this morning, and now the most number of tweets in one day, there were 257,000 tweets on the day on the game of Game 5, when, you know, there was the seventh inning, there was the win to the ALDS, and then onto the next stage, all those celebrations. So that's a huge volume of tweets. We analyse other events as well. We analysed the Pan Am Games, we analysed the Women's World Cup this year, we analysed the Men's World Cup last year, and Blue Jays have really, really kicked it out of the park in terms of volumes of tweets and excitement behind that event.
Brendan Kennedy has been covering the Jays for the Toronto Star for the past three seasons. Since working with the organization, he thinks that Paul Beeston, the former president of the Jays, played a key role in molding the Jays into Canada's team.
His influence was really big in terms of really playing up the fact that the Blue Jays were Canada's team. And they did that in a few different ways. One, you know, going back to the old uniform design, and which displays the maple leaf prominently. I think that's part of it. I mean, it's just purely symbolic, but I think that's part of it. And you notice now on their batting practice caps, the entire logo is just a red maple leaf. So that is these are conscious efforts to tap into the national market. And then there's a good business reason for that as well, just because Toronto itself is a big market. But when you include all of Canada, you expand from 4 or 5 million people, if you include the GTA, to 35 million people, 36 million people. So there's a good business reason to do it as well. But in addition to those symbolic showings where they added the maple leaf or returned the maple leaf to the logo, they also have done things like the winter caravan. Every off season now, I think it's been going 5 or 6 years. They take players and they go to different places across Canada. This past year, they went to Banff and Calgary and Edmonton. I think they went to Vancouver as well. The year before that, they went out east. In previous years, they've gone around Ontario. So they're really trying to, reach out to fans across Canada.
Kennedy also believes that painting North America blue helps set the fan base on fire.
Especially with this past year, the excitement level has never been higher in the time that I've been covering the team. A big turning point was going back to the classic uniforms and the classic logo. And they revamped it, they sort of modernized it, but returning to that, to the classic Blue Jays logo, the classic Blue Jays uniform, I think that actually did a lot for the fan base. You could see it in the number of people wearing caps around Toronto. A younger, hipper fan base. It's remarkable in the last few years how well traveled the Jays fan base is. It seems no matter what city they're going to, because I cover the team on the road as well, and I'm always surprised by how many Jays fans there are, in places like Minneapolis and Phoenix and Arlington. You expect them in Detroit, you expect them in Seattle, but these days they're all over.
The team may have fallen short of winning the World Series, but the fiery fandom ignited still burns deep in Canadian hearts. Alexandria Pankratz, Are You Listening?
That's all for Current Affairs. Thanks for tuning in to Are You Listening? I'm Amanda Gilmore.
And I'm Tagwamoyo. Have a tremendous Tuesday!